saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Al's Spirits and Music here in Reform, Alabama. My name is Hunter Myers, and today we're doing a session titled Closed on Sundays. This first song is called Taking Your Time.
Ain't nothing wrong with taking your time. There's nothing wrong with taking your time. Yeah, that wildflower does just fine. Ain't nothing wrong with taking your time. Funny how the sunshine knows where to go. Nobody tells the water to flow. Yeah, when the wind decides it wants to blow, oh, I reckon it'll blow.
This next song is the song that I actually took down to the Jimmy Rogers songwriting contest a couple of years ago, and I was fortunate enough to win with this song. And it was one of those that didn't mean a whole lot to me until I played it in a different setting. And I think that kind of changed it for me. This one's called Playing Along.
Yeah, I think I've been out here for way too long. And I've been searching over every bridge and turning over every stone, and it's still coming up wrong. Yeah, I'm afraid I've been out here way too long. I think we're all playing along, hanging on to what we know. Say you ain't scared, I know it ain't so. I think we're all just playing along. Lately I've been trying to find the peace of me. Oh, and I lost my mind. I've been searching for that piece of me I lost when I took my last sip of wine. Yeah, I've been out here and I've been patient. Lord, give me a sign.
This next song is actually the only song that I ended up exiting the year 2020 with. We had all that extra time on our hands, and I did write this one song. And it's titled, I Think Somebody's Smoking All My Weed. Of course, I do live alone. So the mystery goes on.
Here I am, I'm knocking on your door. Yeah, it seems I got the same problem that I had before. Well, I woke up this morning only to find, yeah, you know it was the worst case scenario. You know my stash was all dry. Yeah, and I needed somebody smoking on my weed. Yeah, well, I don't know who it is, but I know it ain't. I really think I think somebody is smoking on my weed. Yeah, and if we roll one up, we'll solve this mystery. Oh yeah, I think there's somebody is smoking on my weed. Oh, well, I don't know who it is, but I know it ain't leave me. See, I said I think there's somebody is smoking on my weed. Yeah, if I think about it real hard, if I think about it real hard, I know it's me.
Thank you guys for hanging out with us at Owls Spirits and Music.
All right. We roll.
Nice. Oh, man. I couldn't have picked a worse spot to put the stool. It's rocky. All right, let me get this going here.
Well, welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. We are at Al Spirits and Music, my little slice of paradise here in Reform, Alabama. Hunter Myers, he just played his Closed on Sunday set. It'll be available very soon on all platforms. You'll hear it here on the show. Man, grateful for you coming out and playing.
Grateful to be here, man. You've created, like you said, a little slice of paradise in the place where I least would have expected it, Reform, Alabama.
You know, the original Porch Fest, if you drove 10 miles north on Highway 17,
yeah,
it'd take you to my old house, where it all started.
I was wondering how far we are from the ground zero, as it were.
Yeah. And, I mean, we were talking about that the other day. It's like, dude, it's crazy. Like, you're still, like, trying to do that middle of nowhere shit.
Yep. We have chosen the toughest market, one of the toughest markets to try to launch independent music. But you guys at Munson Brothers and you starting out in Kennedy and now doing it again here, man, I see a wave of change happening.
It's just, you know, it's kind of like what we talked about, though. It's, we, like, whether it's you, whether it's me, Munson, whomever, like, hell, any creative or anybody that's doing something they believe in and they're investing their life into it, is if it's something's good and you know it's good, and then all you're doing is a waiting game. You're just waiting to be found.
Yeah. I've thought about it often. I think that people wonder, myself included, what do you need to be successful in the music industry? Boy, I think the thing you need the most is patience. I think the people who are quote-unquote rewarded in the music industry are the ones that it's persistence that got them there. It's sticking to it, because you're not going to always feel like chasing it. But if you want it bad enough, you'll chase it through those low times. You'll rest when you need to rest, and you'll push when you need to push. But the people I've seen that are successful with it are the ones that stick with it.
Absolutely. You know, and we I know just through doing this show, or just through knowing people, when I was living in Mobile, Cam Lewis, dear friend of mine, called me, and I was living in the bayou, and the island, Dolphin Island, was, you know, 15-20 minute drive from the garage I lived in.
Nice.
And he called me, and because he knew I was on my way out. I was moving back here. I was leaving Mobile.
Yeah.
I had like a couple of days left, and he calls me and he said, if you ain't got nothing going on today, you ought to do yourself a favor and go to Doherty's on Dolphin Island. There's these young guys that go by the Red Clay Strays.
Oh, nice.
And he said, you ain't going to be able to catch a show like that in a place like that.
Probably ever
again.
No.
Mm-mm. He was right.
I bet he was.
And I went, dude, and like I saw like these, man, this has been almost 10 years ago now. And Brandon, the front man,
mm-hmm.
he broke a string, first song, G string, always the one.
Yeah.
And had a pack of strings, replaced that string, show went on. Next song, he broke another string. And, like, they went through a lot of adversity on that show, but you could tell, like, the passion and the fire was there, because, like, they weren't going to let the little, they weren't going to sweat the small things.
There you go. Yeah, no kidding. They were on a mission and not going to be deterred. So there was probably, what, 100 people at that show?
50? No.
You said 10 years ago.
It's like,
right?
It was like 20, 25 people on Dolphin Island. Just an off day, you know? It's just, yeah, like, Red Clay Strays are going to be playing here this evening.
Man.
Wasn't really even like a Facebook post or, you know, any,
yeah,
kind of.
Right, right.
It was just kind of, if you know, you know.
I think about that all the time. You know, you look at the Stapletons, the Childers, these guys that have massive followings. At some point, they were just in like a bedroom, hanging out, living room situation, and then even the smoky bar where no one's paying attention. But man, there are some golden performances out there that we'll never see, because it was before they blew up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, you know, and it's every time they come to Starkville, if they're going to be at Rick's or they're doing anything with MSU, I'm going to catch it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, last time I saw them live was probably down there in Jackson, maybe a year ago. And I didn't even mean to, but we parked kind of near the tour bus. And it was after the show. I'd hung around, had another beer or two. Me and my buddy were heading out back, going to the car, about to leave. And they're out there. It was Drew and Jacob and, well, not Jacob. Jacob's passed, but his brother was out there, the drummer, and the bass player. And I wasn't even going to speak.
Yeah.
I was, you know, great show. I don't know. I don't even know if y'all remember me. It's not a big deal.
Right. I was going to say, hey.
I wasn't going to say. I was just going to go to my car and leave. And they were like, ow.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, man, cool. And, you know, we walk over there and I introduce my friend. And ended up chatting it for about 10, 15 minutes. And you people kind of found out where they were.
Yeah.
And here come the crowd.
And then they got to get in the bus.
Yeah. And I was like, see y'all. But I was like, to be at that level of success and still there's humility.
Mm-hmm.
There's no arrogance about it.
No.
And I see, like, some of the shows, like, if they're going to play in Birmingham, they're going to get one of their Birmingham friends to open.
Nice.
You know, like, everybody gets a chance.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, they're really some Bama boys.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. My wife's mother used to book them at her bar, and she said they were just incredible. And a friend ran across them up at Kimbrough's in Nashville, and he told them, well, you know Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you probably saw it where he posted that story about he saw them at Kimbrough's picking parlor, invited them to crash at his place that night, and he told them, he's like, oh, 5 years from now, you'll be huge. And he posted that again when they went on the Jimmy Kimmel show or something, the Jimmy Fallon or mm-hmm. some late night show, and he was like, I saw these guys and saw it right then. Massive talent, massive humility.
And Sean has had pretty high levels of success himself.
Yes, he has. Yeah. He
and for that to come mm-hmm. from him,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's another thing. It's like, if you're out there, you're a musician, you're a creative, you know this. It's like the pitfalls and the hard times, it usually comes with you're having validation issues. And like, that is a guy, I mean, Sean helped me produce the record. He did the mixing to get it ready for vinyl.
That's right.
And, I mean, Abe introduced us, and he was like, you're a friend of Abe's, you're a friend of mine.
Nice.
And it's just like, there are those things that we really need, and like, that whether it's mid or even just high, of the highest level of talent or even notoriety, is there are people out there in pockets that get it.
Yes. Yes, it's not always the people that you see on the top 40 aren't necessarily all the people that are working the hardest and that have these really beautiful pieces of art that they're sitting on. They're often in the pockets and corners of the country.
Mm-hmm. And, like, just with that, man, it's, I mean, whether it's the middle of nowhere or wherever you're trying to do your thing, man, it's just, and this is just encouragement. This is not bitching. I mean, you're not alone.
That's right.
Is what I'm getting at is, I mean, the analogy that you gave earlier, we were just outside just before we hit that little red button, but I couldn't have put it better. You're a painter and you paint purple. Like, that's what you enjoy to paint, and you paint everything purple. But when you get hired or when someone asks you for something, it's always the color blue or it's green. It's just, it's not what you do. It's not what you were made to do. And it hurts.
You know, it's like an endurance thing, right? How long can you be hired out to... And you're painting a picture that will then be burned, right? So, like, you're creating all of this stuff that goes into the ether, which is just fine. In fact, can be comforting. But if you were a painter and you enjoyed painting in the shades of purple, but you only got hired to show up and paint in blue, and then the fire was set to the painting so it amounts to nothing at the end of the day, you're like, how often and for how long will you do that before you kind of lose the desire to paint and you kind of shift your attention to something else? I think that's what can happen to a lot of independent artists, is you can wind up in these venues where you're offering a product in a market that's not necessarily you're in a restaurant, they're there to eat, they're there to drink, they're not there to find their new favorite indie artist. But if you can wiggle your way in to certain rooms that are listening rooms, even weddings and country clubs and theaters, you're going to find that the product you're offering is now being received by a different market, and they're there hoping to find their next favorite indie artist. You haven't changed your product at all. You sang it just like you sang it 100 times. Why are they now clapping? It's not you. It's not your music. Again, nothing about those things have changed. You put it in a different room. So the takeaway for me is like, yeah, keep going. Find the market for your music, and you'll be amazed at how it's received.
Absolutely. That analogy comes back, and there's a great song. We'll check it out after we get done here. It's by Justin Peter Kinkelschuster. The song is called Painting Houses.
No way.
And
nice. What a name, too.
And, like, the hook in the song is, I'd be better off painting houses instead. And it's about just that. Yeah. Like, the song just came to mind to me. And that's what great. He's saying is, like, if I can't do what I was put on this earth to do, I'd be just as well painting houses.
That's right. Something that makes me good money. Yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Because that's one thing, as indie artists, we pretty much all have in common is, you're probably out there doing what you're doing because you love it. And if you take away that love, you'll quickly find that, oh, shoot, someone would pay me more to just go clock in somewhere, you know?
But yeah.
You talk about not painting at all. So then you stick with it. It's an interesting chase, you know, whether it's music or art or any passion. It really applies to any passion. You watch people chase it, and it's an exciting thing. It's like, what else are we going to do here?
Well, yeah, man, it's just like, and comes to mind again is, I mean, just with you is like, you and I share a similar hobby, but I haven't practiced it in 15 years, wood carving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's so fun, and dude, it's like, yeah. It's great.
Relaxing.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yes, and gosh.
How'd you get into it, man?
I had a friend. So honestly, I've always, since I was very little, I've always wanted to do it. I went to a museum. I was probably about 10. We were out west near Mount Rushmore, and the person that designed Mount Rushmore has kind of an exhibit nearby where all of his other art is displayed, and there's this sculpture of an old man, and he's from the waist up, but he's not wearing any clothes, and he's a very old man. He's reaching up into the sky, and the amount of detail that this artist was able to give this piece of wood, it looks like your grandfather right there. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it as a kid and was like, I don't know what I need to do to carve wood, but I want to carve things. Thought about it, mentioned it my whole life. Saw a friend start carving spoons, and I thought, that's my intro into taking something that has a shape within it. All you have to do is remove everything that isn't that shape. Whether it's, I mean, anything you can imagine, right? Look at some of the greatest sculptors to ever walk the earth. And they've talked about that exact thing. That block of marble holds every shape you can fathom. Challenges, can you remove just the right amount of material to show it? That's the game for me. I love doing that. So I saw him carve spoons. I started carving them. Before you know it, I was trying to do anything I could get my hands on. Tables, lamps, jewelry. What about you?
Man, I was 15, and my cousin, like, he's a good bit older than me. He's probably 20, 25 years older.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to work at the same factory my grandpa and my dad did. And so, like, he was always over at the house, or we were over at his place. But I had a lot of admiration for him already, and I didn't even know that he did wood carving and things like this. But it took him 10 years, but he built his own log cabin, him and his friends, with his bare hands, and did it exactly the way he wanted to do it.
The ultimate dream.
And you would go wrap around the porch, overlooks of meadow.
Mm.
You know, it's just a beautiful property. And, you know, I was 15, and I was getting into a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
We were bored with four-wheelers and trespassing. What's that?
Oh, yeah.
Or if someone did us dirty, we were going to get them back.
Twice as bad.
Yeah. And my grandpa saw that, and Jerry saw it. And Jerry came over to the house one day, and he was like, "You like bows and arrows?" I said, "Yeah, man, like, I love Lord of the Rings. You know, I love anything with archery.
Swords.
Yeah, I love all that.
Right.
I love all that stuff. And
catapult.
Yeah. You got a trebuchet around here? But he was like, "Well, man, we're going to do a summer internship while you're out of school. Come over to the house every morning before I have to go to work. We'll spend about 2 or 3 hours each day. I'm going to give you some reading material. I'm going to teach you how to make a bow."
Whoa.
And he said, "We're going to make two bows together. We're going to start with a very easy wood. It's a stave of hickory."
Wow.
And he said, you're going to take that stave and you're going to turn it into a bow. And I'm going to watch over your shoulder and I'm going to teach you how to do things, but you're going to make it.
Wow, yeah.
And hickory is a very easy piece of wood to work with. The second bow was Osage or Bodock,
mm-hmm,
a very hardy wood.
So hard.
And there's a thing, and this was in the book that he made me read. It was on bow making. And they had chapters dedicated to working with Osage and the idea of you have to find the ring and follow the ring all the way down that wood stave. If you don't, when you go to bend it and teach it how to bend,
mm-hmm,
if you're not on the same ring all the way down,
mm-hmm,
the ring that is above will snap and it'll break.
Wow.
And so you have to stay on the line.
Wow.
And with that Osage, dude, I was on the last line of finding the ring. If I went through this ring and started in the other one, the integrity of the wood, it would not be a bow.
Right.
It could be a walking stick.
Right, right. Piece of art.
Yeah. And Jerry come out there, and, dude, it was summer, and I was getting frustrated, and it was down the wire. It was the last one. It was a beautiful piece of wood. I really wanted to use this piece.
Yeah.
It had the knots and all the character I wanted.
Right.
And he come out there, and he said, you got one shot. You get it right here, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And that draw knife, and I drew, and I got to the very end, and I looked up, and he come out there, and he said, I was watching from the garage. You did it.
Oh, nice.
He knew it. Like,
yeah.
Right when I took that last draw, and I was like, we're here.
Yeah.
You know, and then the butter knife, the sharpened butter, and you're just whittling down the wood, and you're sanding, and you're forming the handle and to fit in your hand.
Your custom hand, right.
And it was crazy. I'm left-handed. It was a left-handed bow.
Mm.
The Osage never favored a lefty. Sid Moore?
Yeah.
He would come over to the house, and he liked shooting bows, and so we would string them up. I wanted to gift that bow to him because it shot so well for him. It shot true.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
right length for him.
Yeah.
Everything.
And these were standard North American Indian longbows. That was the style. I want to go back. I want to get back into it, and I want to take a piece of cherry, and I want to make a English longbow. The style of it, it's a little bit different than Native Americans here did, but...
oh, wow.
Like, and just... Because I've read all the books, like, the different... Through history, the history of archery and how things are made and why, I want to physically know when I string it up, when I pull it...
Feel what you're talking about.
And, and then with just, you know, with the Indians, dude, like... And I'm going to make one of these. I want to make one probably out of maybe a walnut. But it's called a pony bow.
Pony bow.
Short bow. But guess the draw. How much strength it takes to pull back?
40?
180 pounds.
180 pounds.
It wasn't meant to be fully drawn. On the fly while you're on horseback, just pull it and release.
Just a little.
It's so strong, it's going to sling that arrow.
Wow.
It's not about accuracy.
Right.
It's like once you're on the bow, you get a feel, you practice. But you shot that?
Old machine gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make a pony bow. Like But I want to get back in there and just start learning the craft
again.
Do it, man.
I've just started getting back into it recently. And yesterday was probably the first day I've spent in almost a year making any art. And I was sitting there, and part of me was conflicted about, like, God, am I just wasting my day? Like, I should be doing something. But then the other part of me was like, this is what you're doing. You are relaxing. You are enjoying. You know, I was wood burning this thing, and I was going so slow and having to focus so hard, but it was good. That's the flow. That's the now, that you're so absorbed in the next thing that you're not thinking about what you said in the third grade or how that meeting is going to go next week. You're just focused on not messing anything up, not getting off that line in that Osage, right? In that moment, you are so in the now that it's like, that is like the essence of life right there. It's like, can we remain in the now, in the present moment, enough to appreciate even the small things, and you focusing so deeply on that, I kind of want to get back into woodworking because it forces me to live in the flow, in the now, even for that moment. That's why people do anything. Skydive, surf, mm-hmm, anything that involves adrenaline, sex, music, all these things. You're so present. And for me, woodworking takes me there.
Same, man. Of like reading, I've been getting back into that because I was, mm-hmm, telling you, it's like I can't tell you the last time I've played my guitar other than like the open mic. I keep it right by my desk at home, and it's for ease of access, and I can't even reach my hand out to grab it.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with it.
Yep.
And, like, just having those different avenues is like, maybe I just need to find a different way to express.
I mean, because, yeah, that's with anything. Balance. Balance with anything. If it's only that outlet that you have, you're going to get burnt out on that and have nothing, right? Mm. It's good to have these different things. Be like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I love woodworking. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I make beautiful bows.
Yeah.
Don't need music right now. My soul is calling for fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right now, it's the bows are calling you.
Yeah, and lately it's been, you know, reading. Like, I've been reading more.
What have you been reading on?
Man, I'm fantasy, dude. Like, I read Lord of the Rings once a year.
Oh, it takes the imagination and just takes you away to another planet.
And that's something else that I wanted to get into, and I've been reading, like, other fantasies, and, like, in my opinion, dude, it's like, I can't remember the last time that I've read, like, a modern-day, like, fantasy that mm-hmm. was enjoyable, or mm-hmm. that there's this great one. It's the Kingkiller Chronicles.
Okay, Kingkiller.
Yeah, don't read it because the author won't finish it.
Oh,
he's wrote two books. It was supposed to be three.
But it's really good?
Yeah, it's great, but you don't know how it is.
It's amazing, but it's killing me to not know the ending. But what if he's working on it?
Or he says it all the time. He's always like, I check on his social. He's always working on it.
That's funny.
I'm working on it, working on it.
Drop the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, man. What the hell?
You should have seen the amount of despair I felt last night. We've been watching The Last of Us, and I didn't even realize it was the last episode, so I wasn't even mentally like, all right, this is it. You know, so I'm just casually watching the episode, and wow, it ends on a cliffhanger, and I notice it's over, and I'm like, oh, the season's over? And then not only was that like the first blow, I was like, I wasn't ready for that. And then we looked it up, and it's like 2 years before the next one's coming out. 2 years? 2 years? We won't even have TVs in 2 years. What are you talking about, 2 years? I'm out. Forget everything you just saw. You won't remember it in 2 years.
I picked it up the other day, though, dude, because a friend of mine, because, I mean, that's my, if I'm going to read, I typically read fantasy or, like, but it's got to be like a certain type. It goes back to swords and longbows. I'll do a little magic. It's just like, but that's another thing about the Kingkiller Chronicle that I liked.
Yeah,
is Kalf, the main character, is like the chosen one. He's powerful.
He's the Neo.
Yeah, but and like the way that they did magic in this book, I really love because it had never been done like this.
How would you compare it? Is it like Harry Potter magic? Is mm-hmm. it like Lord of the Rings magic?
Like, check this out. Is the way that the chant or the spell is cast, mm-hmm. you have to know the name of it. Like, and one of the names in the book, I think it's the second one, is it might have been the first one, Name of the Wind. He almost kills himself, his teacher, and the entire world because he accidentally called the Name of the Wind, and he sucked all the air out of the place.
Whoa.
And everything was choking.
Whoa.
That's how powerful
it
is.
How do you restore that? Call it again? Yeah, repeat it.
But no,
reverse it.
Couldn't make a sound.
Oh God! Yeah,
no air.
Wow. Did you ever read Artemis Fowl growing
yeah,
up?
Yeah,
man, those were great.
Yeah,
Ender's Game.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Even the movie was not bad compared to how bad it could
people
be.
Shit on it, but it's not. It's true to form.
I was just gonna say it's pretty accurate to the book. And if you don't like the movie, you most likely wouldn't like the book that much more. But I thought the book was intense. It was trippy to hear them talk about the future in this AI game where you're controlling and have unlimited free will in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we're not too far away from that.
Oh, dude. I mean, you can get an AI girlfriend now.
Right.
You
know? And it's encouraged.
Yeah.
It's not even like you can find one.
If you find yourself scrolling, you're going to see an ad.
It's going to be like, would you like an AI girlfriend? That's going to change things. It's going to be so funny. The wedding industry is like, oh, no. How do we pivot? We offer AI weddings now.
Well, not only that, it's like, man, because I wonder this too. It's just like socially. And I do believe like that time we had in 2020 when everything was different and like people didn't go out. And the kids that were coming up that were in college, coming out of high school, that I would say that 17 to 24-year-old range, I may just be in the wrong part of town or – I don't think they go out.
I think it definitely, like, you know, everybody at those ages were on a trajectory of, like, at that age you do this, and then it just went left.
You couldn't.
Now it was like, actually, we're going to stay at home and bake bread.
Yeah.
A bit of a renaissance.
And our friends come over. We play Cards Against Humanity.
Board games.
We have a couple of drinks, and by 11 o'clock, we're all in bed.
Yeah, everybody's tuckered out. Everybody's like, wait a minute, why were we going to the club? Oh, yeah, there's no good reason to go to the club.
Oh, and by the way, I have a lot more money now.
Now there's more money. I don't feel so bad the next day. I found myself out on a Saturday night recently, and hopefully I'm playing music somewhere on a Saturday night, but I found myself not doing that, and we went out to a show at Change, and it was awesome. It was so great. I had the best time, and it hit me. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is why people go out. I was like, no. I was like, I had not done it for so long that it hit me as in, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. That's why places exist, for people to get together and socialize. If you don't do it all the time, boy, it is a special thing to be experiencing live music in a room of people. It's hard to even put words around it.
It's something else I noticed, man. We get a lot of interns at work, and typically they're MSU engineering program. Sure. But I don't know if they're intimidated. They don't know how. They don't care to. I don't know. They communication. Like, they don't know how to talk to people.
It's different, yeah.
And I was pulling one aside. It was his last week. And I was like, man, you know, you did great. You need me for a reference. Put me down. You showed up on time. You did what you were asked to do. And here's the thing, man. It's like most kids your age, right? They don't work.
No,
they go to school and sit on student loans or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, to every young person I see that's out there working and grinding and getting experience, it don't look like it, and it sucks because your friends ain't doing it. But you're going to have something on your resume when all they have is a degree.
Oh, it's going to be the ant and the grasshopper situation. Like, that is an old but true story there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I told a young person who was kind of in that position recently, and I was like, look, you're going to have to either work early or later. But, you know, you can either put it off for as long as you can put it off. It'll find you.
Mm-hmm.
Life circumstances, unless you get incredibly lucky with something, eventually it'll catch up to you, and you'll have to work harder later when you have less energy. So you might as well work hard now while you've got the energy, and then you can play later.
That's an age-old trope with even, like, children, having a family. It's like, it does. Timing is timing, and timing is perfect.
Yes, it is.
But, like, man, I can't tell you how many times, especially when I was married, y'all thinking, like, you need to get going on the kids.
Sure.
Like, you're gonna love it if you go ahead and do it.
Go ahead and do it.
You got the energy now. And the longer you wait, the harder it is.
That's right. Well, and, you know, and I'm about to have our first. You know, we're expecting at the end of September. So that's been crossing my mind. I'm like, all right, I'm taking a gauge and a check of how much energy I have. I'm like, okay, this is going to be probably one of the most challenging, probably, I would think, the most challenging thing I've ever done. So I need to make sure I got my energy at an all-time high, because I'm not 22 anymore. I'm 32. And it's going to be, there's going to be a difference in that. So, but I'm excited.
And you got, like, me and you are kind of like the same. Our brothers got started a little early.
Right.
And so, like, I know I'm a good uncle. I was like, does it translate?
I don't know, because half the things I do with my nephews, I would not dream of doing with my own child, right? Like, what? Why would I chuck this kid across the room onto the bed? That sounds dangerous. Don't do that. But a nephew, hucking,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's what they were made for.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, does being a good uncle translate into being a good dad? To be determined. Hopefully so.
Oh, man, y'all excited, you and Cassie?
So excited. We are so excited. It's it's one of those things where if you've never done it before, you can only be, you know, so excited. And then you hit this wall where you're like, it's so unknown that you're anticipating it and you're happy for it. But then it hits you in waves where you're like, oh, my gosh, I've always known myself to not have to worry about a child. And now I'm like, here it comes. You know, I guess that'll just be. But they say it's a natural thing, right? I mean, seems to be probably the most natural thing we experience here on Earth if we go that route. So it's like, I'm sure it'll come. I've got this faith in myself that everything you need will be there. It's like, it's already in there. You just haven't unlocked it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just in the past, like just people giving unsolicited advice. But whenever they would bring that up to me, it's like, you got to find somebody, you're going to settle down, and then that biological clock's going to tick, and just one day you're going, y'all going to be with child.
Yeah.
It's like, because it's like everything about your body, that natural instinct thing,
right?
It kicks and it comes out.
It kicks. Well, you know, it's funny. We've been together for 17 years, and we always were like, well, you know, we're not going to have kids. We're not going to have kids. And then last year, we were like, you know what? Maybe we should. And then if it wasn't like a week later, and we were like, wow. Well,
glad we decided.
I'm glad we decided. You know, it was like, it was just the intention behind it that was needed. But, you know, it's like timing, like you said, it's always perfect.
Yeah. Dude, this, we were checking it out last night. It was me and my brother and a couple friends, and we were talking music. We were talking about clothes on Sundays, and
yeah.
I was telling them about, you know, who all's coming and what's going on, and I was like, Rich Henderson out of Coleman's coming, and
great musician.
It's kind of like I see it like a Gabe Lee or like people like that. Like one. He's about to come up.
Yeah,
like he's on his way up for sure. There's no doubt.
Oh gosh.
And he just released this cover. I wasn't a Tim McGraw fan, and so like anything Tim McGraw, and older now, I can listen to it and I can appreciate it and experience it and not be a dickhead about it.
Right.
But Tim McGraw had a song called Red Ragtop. Rich just covered it. I knew the song. A very popular song.
Yeah.
I listened to Rich's version because I don't really listen to Tim, and I was like, holy shit, this song's about abortion.
Oh, wow. I've never heard this song.
Verse 2, wow. All day long.
Wow. Deep song for top 40 country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I look back into the history of it. It was controversial.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm. That song caught a lot of flack for that.
Was it pro, or it was pro-abortion? It was supporting, well, someone who made the choice to have an abortion? Or?
It was Red Rag Top, verse 1. That's how it ended. Please, wow, don't stop loving me. Verse 2, he's meeting her mama, and she's with child.
Oh, wow.
But he lost his job, and she was still in school, and so they made a decision that it's not time.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's how verse 2 goes, and that's also how their love died.
Wow.
Because one of the lines in the song was like, we swore we would never regret, but it wasn't enough.
Oh, dang.
So it's not pro or anti, it's just, here's what happened.
Wonder where he wrote that from.
I don't think Tim wrote it.
No, probably not. A lot of those guys... Yeah, had a lot of writers.
Yeah, writer, room of writers.
Room of writers.
But great song.
Great song. Yep. It's a funny thing about great writers and great songs. Is like you could be standing right next to the guy that wrote the song you grew up listening to, and a lot of times you have no idea. There's nothing being given off by that individual that would make you think they're a famous songwriter. I can't tell you how many times I've been like, had a thing. I remember being at a pool party of musicians, and we're hanging out, talking, having a good time, having pizza. And this old, you know, guy walks over, and he's kind of, you know, and I was like, who's that guy? And everybody's like, oh my God, you know, I just thought it was somebody's like old drunk uncle that found their way to the pool and didn't even belong here. And they're like, oh, he wrote, like, listed like three major songs. I was like, well, I guess I'd be a rowdy, drunk, funny guy, too, if I was, you know, if I wrote three mega songs 40 years ago.
Dude, this area in particular, rich history.
Yeah.
Don Penn is his writer's name. Out of Vernon, Alabama.
Don
Penn. He wrote one of the most, yeah.
Wow, what a name. That's a cool name.
It's both his names shortened. Like, he didn't change his last name, he just shortened it.
Smart. But he's a famous songwriter.
You wouldn't know it.
Yeah, background.
He wrote one of the most iconic songs for the state of Alabama.
Oh, wow.
If Heaven Ain't a Lot Like Dixie.
Whoa.
He wrote a lot of songs for Hank Williams.
Vernon, Alabama. I'm telling you, there's something in the soil around here, something in the water. I think, honestly, it's like this is a place of struggle. We've seen it our whole life. And way before our years, this place is just known to be a place that struggles, this part of the country, this state. Mississippi and Alabama together, this whole pocket. But what do you get from struggle?
Great art.
Great art. Boy.
Oh, man, a coworker. We were talking about this. He's so funny. And what's crazy, he's not right, but I'm not encouraging this, but it's I do want to have a conversation about it. He said, you listen to that new Tyler Childers? I said, yeah. He said, I can't stand that shit. I liked him a lot better when he was a drug addict and a drunk.
I think there's some lyrics in his new songs that references how he's pissed off a bunch of his old fans. Did you see that?
Yeah,
there's a couple lines where it's like, you know, talk about how they'll say he's lost his way and you know, used to be better and this and that. It's interesting to see how an artist goes that route. I also saw it with John Mayer in that, in my opinion at least, you know, he did all these pop songs, and then once he got to the level he could make his own decisions, he didn't do pop anymore. He stopped it immediately and did his jazz trio. He did, obviously.
Genre bending.
You know.
Like, not one, you know, early career, like you said, it was pop, but not one John Mayer album is same genre as the last.
No, and they take a, like, a, they, on a graph, they really change.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and then it's Grateful Dead stuff. But yeah, once you get to that level, do whatever you want to do, music-wise, is one route to get there. And I think, you know, I don't think Tyler Childers did any music that wasn't genuine to him at the time. But he did what was real to him at the time when he was a drug addict and a drunk. And then when he wasn't those things anymore, I would hope the art would change with it.
It did.
It did. So then it's like, respect the guy for changing and appreciate, you know, him as an artist, not him in that time in his life.
It's so funny because, like, what he'll do, what he said, man, is so funny. He said, I hate to say this, Alan, but if you're an artist, musician, whatever you're doing creatively, the very best version of you is when you were at your very worst.
Yeah.
And he said, you need to be hungry, addicted to some kind of drug. You need to be an alcoholic. If you're married, I hope your wife leaves you. He said, I want you brokenhearted.
Yeah. Truck needs to not run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, good, because I'm checking off so many of those bingo squares that pretty soon we ought to have a record deal or a divorce lawyer. That's funny. I always give praise to the partners of musicians because I'm like, hey, he or she may be out there on the stage, but when they come home, boy, it's that other person that deals with everything that isn't the glamour and the this and that. And they often don't get enough praise for keeping that insane person sane.
Well, dude, I really enjoyed it. Is there anything else that has come to mind that you wanted to touch on before we start walking out the door?
No, I appreciate what you're doing here, man, at Al's Spirits and Music. I think it's a special thing. I think it's much more than what it's ever been before. You know, in the past, it's been a place somebody could come get their drinks. Now, one day a week, when, like I said earlier, you could be on the couch on Sunday, a well-deserved day off, in my opinion. Instead, you wake up early and put together something like this and pay artists like myself to come out here and play some music, hoping that you're planting seeds. And I'm here to help water it, and I think it's going to grow into something beautiful, brother.
Man, I appreciate you taking me up on it.
Yeah.
Just a couple things before we go. Social media plugs. What's the best way for people to kind of keep up with you, with the wood carving, or with music?
Find me on huntermyersmusic.com. It takes you to anything you could ever want about me. Videos, Spotify, where I'm playing next. So, yeah, huntermyersmusic.com is kind of a hub.
Right on. Question two, man, just... I just put you on the spot, really. What's something that you've been learning so far this year? What's come with this year? What's come with the season?
You know that thing about being persistent, being moving forward. Sometimes you roll that ball forward a little bit each day. Sometimes you roll it forward a lot that day. And some days you don't roll it forward at all. But the most important day is the day you don't roll it backwards. So that's what I'm learning this year.
Right on. Hunter, thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. That's fun. I like